Welcome to First Reading, the Old Testament lectionary podcast for all lovers of the Hebrew Scriptures. I'm Dr. Tim McNinch. I'm assistant professor of Hebrew Bible at Christian Theological Seminary.
Did you have to think about that for a second?
I did. I'm still getting used to this whole Dr. McNinch thing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's so fun. I suppose I should say my name. I'm Reverend Dr. Rachel Wren. I teach biblical studies at Trinity Lutheran Seminary at Capital University. We are bringing you teaching insights, preaching tips on the text for October 6th, 2024. And Tim is up this week. So where do you want to go, Tim?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do the psalm.
Yeah, I love it.
Figured I'm sitting here with a psalm scholar. I might as well dip into the psalm. And actually, there's a couple reasons why I want to do Psalm 8 as our text. The first reason is the other reading for us. The first reading is from Genesis 2. And we have a really good episode on that excerpt from Genesis 2 that I kind of hosted, I guess, about 3 years ago. I'm kind of proud of that
oh
one.
My gosh.
So go back and find that one. It was pretty good.
Awesome.
And in all these years that we've been doing the podcast, we've never done an episode on Psalm 8.
So I had the same reaction because 2 weeks ago I did Psalm 1 and I had the same reaction. I was like, oh, we must have done this one already. And we have not. So like we got a lot of Psalms to go through.
So here we are. And if I had to guess, I would say probably Psalm 8 is what, your favorite psalm in the whole Bible or something like that?
So funny enough, it's not one of my favorites, actually. So I'm ready for you to make it one of my favorites today.
All right. Well, give me a little of your hesitation. What is it about Psalm 8 that rubs you the wrong way?
It's so anthropocentric. What are mortals that you are mindful of them? You have made them a little less than angels. Like, I hear that one often cherry-picked and put next to Genesis 1 and with this idea that, oh, humans were the only thing that God called very good. And it's like, actually, that's not right. God made humans and then it was complete and God called all of creation very good. So I prefer texts that put us in our place a little bit more than elevating us. I think we do a pretty good job of elevating ourselves.
Well, that's a great way to start out then with a little bit of a preaching pitfall.
Yeah.
Of not using this psalm as an excuse to glorify ourselves and to puff ourselves up, but to find where the worship is in this.
Yeah.
And where an appropriate place for humanity's role in the cosmos might be.
Yeah.
So we'll go forward with that in mind and see if you find something lovely here in Psalm 8.
Perfect.
So I'm going to try to do a little bit of our typical first reading nuggets of context, a little bit of help with the Hebrew, some of those preaching pitfalls, and then maybe a preaching angle. If I can think of one by the end.
Cool.
So a little bit of context then. It's hard to give context to Psalms, but I mean, at least literarily here, we're near the beginning of the book of Psalms, Psalm 8. So you don't have to dig too far into the Psalms to get there. However, this is probably one of the later Psalms to be composed. There's some features here. It refers to the name of God. It has a sort of name of God theology, which is a kind of late development within the biblical world. It also has a kind of universal scope that God's the God of everything, which is also a later concept. And it seems to have, you mentioned that often this is preached alongside of Genesis 1. This psalm seems to have a bit of Genesis 1 on the brain. And, you know, that comes from a kind of priestly scribal tradition that is also kind of late-ish in the composition of the Bible. So as far as context goes, then, we can kind of think of this as one of those poems that is kind of reflecting back on the whole context of the biblical tradition up to this point.
Yeah.
So it's a bit reflective in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the other context would be, you know, genre-wise, like to state the obvious, this is a poem.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You all out there have probably heard me say this a lot, you know, as far as preaching poems, I always feel like you can only do so much exegetical analysis of a poem before it starts to lose its poetic quality.
Mm-hmm.
The the work of poetry is to evoke things in us and from us. So if you're preaching this text as your sermon text, well, let it be a poem. Let it evoke what it's going to evoke, and then run with that.
Yeah. So what are some of the images that you see evoking coming out of this psalm?
Yeah, I mean, it's pulling in all sorts of imagery. There's kind of the image of the night sky and the sense of humanity's smallness in this vast, powerful, majestic creation. There's the wonder that the psalmist has that the maker of all of this would even think about humans at all. Mm-hmm. Why would God even spare us a thought? And yet we insignificant ones have, as you were mentioning before, this almost godlike presence in the world, and trying to figure out what that's all about is here in this poem, a sense of responsibility to govern the other creatures. Funny enough, as I was reading through this, the image that really captured me, and I'm not sure why, is in verse 3 in English. This is one where the verses are plus 1 in Hebrew because of the superscription. But in English, in verse 3, it talks about the work of your fingers. When I look at the heavens, the work of your fingers. And something about that work of your fingers kind of caught my attention and sent me on this little rabbit trail. I actually looked up to see where the word finger shows up in the Bible. And it's actually not that common of a word. Half of the occurrences of finger are in Leviticus.
Oh.
And instructions for the priests, like dip their fingers in blood or in oil and splatter it on the altar, sort of like a biblical Jackson Pollock painting. But it's in the context of this solemn ceremony of this liturgy of worship. The use of the fingers for that is explicitly called for. There's a couple times in Isaiah where the prophet's bashing the priests of the nations because they've built these idols as the work of their fingers. Which is interesting. I mean, again, it's like religiously significant work that's being done.
Yeah.
And you know, the other time where finger comes up prominently is in a couple places where it talks about the giving of Torah, the instructions, the law of Moses. These tablets, these stone tablets, are inscribed by the finger of God.
Yeah.
So here we have this important, precise work that's done with the fingers.
And so, all religious context too, you know, it's the either the idols or Leviticus or the Torah. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So somehow the fingers, we get the phrase, the hand of God or the work of God's hands. That's pretty common. But it's in these few occasions that it specifies the work of God's fingers or the work of people's fingers. Mm-hmm. In either case, this sort of finger work implies a kind of precision to it.
Yeah.
There's an intricacy of the labor that's involved. And that's what the poet says. When they look at the night sky, they see finger work. The work of God's fingers.
I wonder if it's like the placing of the stars, like the precision that would need to be. Is that kind of what you think is going on there? Or
Yeah. Like they imagine God taking God's time.
Yeah.
Very precisely. This isn't just sort of thrown up there. This is like this little bit's put there, this little bit's put there.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's an interesting way to think about the created order as this careful project of the creator.
Yeah. And so lovingly tended too. You know, you don't do something with precision unless you really care about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe this whole finger work thing isn't the image that's going to energize everyone's reflective imagination. But, you know, if you're thinking of preaching this poem, then read it out loud to yourself and see which phrases kind of capture your imagination and run with that.
Yeah. And I would say the other thing I would say is, you know, poetry is meant to be read aloud. It's also meant to be heard. So ask someone else to read it and just listen. And as they read it, see what jumps out to you too.
So. Yeah. So that's, you know, if you're in a routine of sermon prep that feels kind of like, you're just, you know, turning the gears mm-hmm. and going through the same sort of factory process of sermon creation. This could be a different kind of process of just meditation and seeing what the Spirit stirs in your imagination.
Yeah, I love that idea. So what you said you were kind of going through our basic context mm-hmm. here. So is that make Hebrew helps come up next? Do you have any Hebrew things you'd lift up?
Sure. So full transparency here. I spent some time, probably way too much time as I was prepping this with the Hebrew in this poem. And I could go on for a long time about that, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to sort of flag one thing.
Okay.
You brought this up as you were talking about this earlier. This poem seems to have a lot in common with the first creation story in Genesis. Mm. But I actually pulled up Genesis 1 and put it side by side with this. And the Hebrew is very different between these two poems. Huh. Almost every single key term in Genesis 1 that is alluded to here in Psalm 8 uses a different word for it.
Huh, that's interesting.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just a few examples. You have in Genesis 1, the chaos out of which God makes creation is described as tohu vavohu, the sort of, how do we translate that?
Chaos and void, formless and void.
Yeah, formless and empty, whatever that is, right? And here, the stronghold of creation that God has made comes from infants and babies.
Which are also very chaotic.
Yes. Olelim ve'yonkim. I sort of like out of the babble of babies.
Yeah.
From the baby babble, God creates all of this. And, you know, in Genesis 1, over and over, everything that God does is declared or recognized to be good. Toh. Mm. Whereas here it's adir, noble, you know, wondrous. Mm. Several others, just even, you know, the birds in Genesis 1 are of, here they're tzipor. Mm. The wild beasts in Genesis 1 are chayat aretz, here they're behemot sadeh, et cetera, et cetera. Even the person in Genesis 1 is Adam, here it's enosh. Mm. And the responsibility they're given in Genesis 1 is to rada, to like rule, whereas here it's mashal, to govern.
Ah, interesting.
There's several others. I won't bore you all with them, but it's just interesting that I wonder if the poet here has Genesis 1 in mind, but is intentionally like using different words.
Yeah.
In order to sort of like make a remix of.
Yeah.
Of Genesis 1.
He's sampling. They're sampling Genesis 1.
and have it sort of hit the ear in a new way and sort of provoke a new kind of reflection on that probably familiar tale of creation. You know, so I sort of was thinking it's a little bit like if you've been reading the Bible in one particular English translation for years and years, and then you read a familiar passage in a translation that you don't normally use, it awakens something in your recognition of the text.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what the poet was doing here, but it, maybe.
I like that. One, I don't know if preachers would want to go this far, but it could be fun to, if you're going to preach on this, to find three very different translations of it and read all three of them and then preach, you know, because that'll wake ears up and evoke an experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to be honest. I'm not sure how all of this fancy Hebrew stuff will make it into a sermon. But thinking about this poem as a kind of remix of Genesis 1, maybe there's something you could do of a like a retelling of creation that would fit the flavor of this poem.
Mm. And the flavor of your community, if you think about it that way too.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, we hinted at a preaching pitfall. Maybe we should go there a little bit.
Yeah, there's a couple here. What did you find?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the first one you mentioned at the beginning of the episode about how this seems to elevate humanity to this really prominent position. And in some ways, it could be read as a kind of excuse to dominate the rest of creation, just sort of trample it under feet.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's really what this poem is going after. After all, it starts out with recognizing how small humanity is in the mix.
Yeah.
Like, we are so insignificant that why would the creator of all this vast, powerful, glorious creation even spare us a second thought?
Mm.
That's sort of our natural place, you might say. And yet, we do have an outsized influence on what happens on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, aside from the Bible, that's just something we can see, right?
Right. That's just reality.
For better or worse.
Right.
Lots of worse.
Yeah.
Humanity has a large footprint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think what this poem is calling humanity to is to take that footprint seriously.
Mm.
And as a divinely given responsibility of care for this beautiful finger work of God.
Yeah.
Like, if God cares about it so much to invest finger work in it, then whatever, delegated responsibility we have to govern the creation, we better take that seriously and put a lot of care into
it. Should be done with finger work as well, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
If we are the image of God, if we're somehow to reflect God in the world, we should take the same kind of care with creation that the maker of it all has taken in putting it together in the first place.
It's an interesting juxtaposition, thinking of the body images between feet, like this is under our feet versus God's finger work. Which one of those are we going to privilege?
Mm-hmm.
What, our feet which stomp, or our fingers which tend and care for lovingly. So.
Right. I mean, there is that phrase there in this poem about you've put all things under their feet, under the human's feet.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it sounds to me, that image makes me think of like trampling.
Yeah.
They're under our feet. But, I don't even know if that's really what the poet was going for with that image either. There's only a few places where under the feet comes up in the Bible as a whole. And most of them aren't about trampling.
Yeah.
They're about a certain path, or a coming from far away to a close place where the closeness is right under your feet, sort of thing. And so I wonder if that image here is kind of, rather than all of these creatures that are named here being no concern of humans, like we're distant from them. No, God has brought them right under our feet and says to us, these are mine. Now take good care of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a beautiful kind of call to shift our understanding of our relationship to the created world as a creature, as creatures ourselves who are called to care for the creatures around us.
Mm. Yep. And really, that would probably be the angle that I would take for preaching this. Mm. I would turn this poem that's often interpreted, like you were saying at the beginning, as an excuse to lord it over the rest of the created order. Instead, I think this is a call to careful, delicate, finger-type work of care and stewarding of the creation. And there's kind of some really wonderful imagery to bring that home.
Look at you drawing out the body imagery in a psalm. I just feel like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
I've learned from the best.
No, but really, that's a beautiful, I mean, truly, you have brought new light to this psalm for me in a way that I won't be able to think about this psalm or the night sky without picturing the kind of delicate sort of placing of diamonds in that beautiful blackness. So thank you for that, Tim. That was wonderfully done.
Sure thing.
Folks, I hope you take up the call to preach this sermon and preach on this text. You will not regret preaching from the Psalms, and you might even enjoy it. So jump in. If you are looking for other Psalms to preach on, or other texts to preach on, or just want a resource that you can give to people who have questions about the Bible, head on over to our website, firstreadingpodcast.com. You'll find back episodes there. You'll find merchandise. You'll find ways to donate if you'd like to support what we do here. And we are very grateful to all those who not only listen, but support. And we're also grateful if you just listen as well.
Yeah.
If you have feedback for us, you can send us an email at firstreadingpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Rachel Wren.
I'm Tim McNinch. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.